I'm not going crazy, but lately my head and my heart seem to be at least a million miles apart. And my heart says to love you, my head says to run. It's like my heart is too afraid to tell my head what it's done. I know that it could never be the way it was, even though you'll be the death of me. I can't give you up. Too much is not enough. It's not the love, it's not the lust that grips me. Must be the whiskey.
All right, New River Valley, welcome back. This is Mark Tapp with Keith Weltons. You're listening to AM Hodgepodge. Mm-hmm. That was by request.
Yeah. Did you put that in his Spotify?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I accessed it through his Spotify, but I didn't save it.
Save that one. And the other one that he does, which is really good, and it's 5 years old too, is Hippies and the Cowboys.
Yeah, I got that one right here.
Yeah, let's listen to that one.
All right.
It's very Drop him into his thing, though. He's got a great voice.
Well, I started on the whiskey pretty early this morning. That's all right.
Picking up
was up all
it
night,
is.
But I passed out before the sun came up. I really wanted to see one of those. I know that's no way for a man to behave.
His rhythm through all of it is of course, this is 6-7 years old now.
Yeah.
So there's so many people today that sing this way.
Yeah.
And he's just singing the way that Johnny Cash did. Johnny Cash didn't really sing. He just kind of talked the way through the...
It's like Elf. Singing's easy. It's just talking loudly.
Yeah, but within tune, though.
Right.
You got to be...
Yeah, he's... I would venture to say... Now, I don't know a lot of his songs. I'd venture to say that he's not as talented musically as Stapleton.
Correct.
Vocally.
Yeah.
But his music... I could see how this would be really great concert or bar music.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Turn this up real quick.
They don't care about no trends. They don't care about songs that sell. Yeah, tomorrow I'll be gone. So tonight...
That'd be good slow dance music, too.
So all of it is so that you can dance that... two-step and that Texas swing. Yeah, absolutely. Large places that will have both rodeo and music and stuff like that.
Rodeo and like the kind of thing where they cover the dirt floor with hardwood for a little while so you can dance on it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Traveling venues.
Yeah. Indoor.
If you had...
Because it's too hot otherwise.
If you had a voice, like a good voice,
uh-huh.
What kind of music would you want to sing?
I've always liked the ones that are more talking. Because when I try and sing, it's terrible. That's what I always... I mean,
it's not that bad. It's pretty bad.
It is.
Are you trying, though? Are you like really trying to be impressive musically, or are you kind of most of the time having a little taking the mickey?
No.
You're pretty serious about it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We're looking up another song, or what are you doing over there?
No, I'm just getting ready for the outro.
Okay. So I do have one last thing.
Uh-huh.
And so you were talking about the vacations and kind of what we're doing for Father's Day. So coming up, and you're in a period of time that, you know, as once again, people start to travel. They go places. They go see people. And souvenirs are a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So... souvenirs being what they are. In the past, and I'll do it again this year, it's going to be harder to do it from Florida because I'm flying. But I'm a big believer that when you travel, you need to drink a beer, and then every one that you have, you need to buy an extra one or two so that you can bring back to somebody else, and then you can tell them what you had and why you had it, right? So with that being said, my challenge is that someone 3 months from today-ish will come in and say, well, I traveled, and these are the things, these are the ones I brought, and then here's the little story behind them.
Yeah.
You think we'll get any takers on that?
Oh, so you're offering a challenge to someone out there listening that says, go somewhere.
Share with me their travels.
And bring back a story with a beer to go with.
Share with me their travels.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, you're welcome. Share with me, like, why.
Kind of like Dan did
with
his brother.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be
You don't have to go to New England.
Right. But it does have to be
in a day.
It's got to be fairly interesting.
Although that's a great story. Yes.
Do you think people are intimidated? Do you think if you're a good storyteller, you know you're a good storyteller?
Well, me personally?
Well, I already know the answer to that.
I believe a good story is told because you know when to slow down and you know when to speed it up. To
engage.
Yeah. And when you've got them on the hook, you kind of flip it and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do believe that there's some level of an art.
There's an art. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because a story is like a good joke.
It could be intimidating for somebody to think, oh my gosh, I've got a good story, but I don't know if it's good enough for
doesn't matter. We can help them out.
Yeah.
Totally help them out. We've helped out all kinds of people in here be able to get over any level of fear or concern. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to put that challenge on our Facebook, and we'll see who kind of...
Now, we're not encouraging interstate contraband.
No. If it happens, it happens.
Right. But to definitely bring a story and a beer.
I do think you can bring one or two beers across state lines and they don't care. I think it has to be enough that it could actually be what's called distributed.
Does it have to be an open can inside of a paper bag? Or?
No.
Okay.
I think there has to be. I think it's all based off of distribution laws.
And, I'm sure you're right.
Traffic laws being broke in the process.
Yeah.
But I don't think carrying one or two the challenge is, if you're traveling this summer, particularly if you're, let's say, going to take an RV trip, multiple locations, or if you go to Richmond for a weekend and maybe you're going to do four or five different breweries, challenge would be, why don't you go ahead and grab some of those and then contact us and bring them on in, and let's just hear about your little story and maybe share one, if not all of them, over multiple periods of time, and we'll be able to kind of take it from there. But it's something that I've done for, 9 years since we've known each other. And the purpose behind doing that is that a lot of times the person you work with, they're having to feel your shoes while you're gone.
Right.
And it's an opportunity to let them know that when they were wringing their sweat off of their back because they were pulling the load of two while you were, at this great Crab Shack, that you can tell the story of why the Crab Shack was so great. And when you had that beer, you couldn't cheers to them at that site at that time, but you could when you came back and said, I appreciate you giving me that time.
It's a great idea.
There you go. All right.
And it might even be a tax write-off for somebody.
Depends who you are. If you're a business owner, I'm certain that it could be.
Use this as a marketing opportunity, and the beer was your leg in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You write off your trip.
Right. I know I'm probably not the only person who's done all of this, but I know that I started it on the RV trip. So, man, actually, I got to go back now, because if I started that on the RV trip, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
12 summers ago. So, deal?
That's a great idea. So we can't, we kind of promised something in the last segment, and now I can't renege on that promise. But I do want to ask you a real quick question. So you were in Scotland,
uh-huh.
and I'm sure you remember the glasses mm-hmm. in England.
Yeah.
So here in America, you know, if you go to a bar, you're going to get
stackable pint glasses.
Whatever. Yeah, you're going to get whatever glass they have at
right.
that.
Right.
Could be a pint glass, could be one of those barrel glasses mm-hmm. or whatever. But there's nothing on it. And I'm sure you remember on every pint glass in Europe, there is, well, in England mm-hmm. and Scotland, there is a something on there.
Right. Etched.
Yeah. You remember what that is?
It's not Guinness and it's not the one, it's not the 1.2L or whatever. What is it?
There's a crown.
A crown. Okay. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
And it's a essentially the
pour line.
Well, the crown designates that as a pint.
Correct.
As measured by or as approved by the queen.
Yeah.
I believe that's right. I mean, if I'm wrong, somebody can say, tell us on Facebook.
But I'm pretty sure
that's right.
It was done in order to replicate the correct head on a pour and not rip someone off with the cheat them on the because the taxation is the component.
That's exactly right. So it probably comes as no surprise to you that there is actually an effort to discover whether or not pub goers are being ripped off in England. And there's a group.
By the king?
It's the Chartered Trading Standards Institute. And this institute is monitoring pours in pubs. And what they have found is that 8 out of 10 pints poured in British pubs are underfilled.
I could believe that.
And they've actually determined that. So beer drinkers typically only get 96% of each pint they purchase.
Yeah. So that actually, when they say 96%, is that including the head?
I believe it doesn't say here.
So a pint.
But I believe that the head. So a pint glass has room for the head.
Correct.
In addition to the pint.
Right.
Right.
Correct.
So if you fill just to the pint line and that is the top of your head, then you've done it incorrectly.
Yeah.
You've ripped a consumer off. So they've determined that the average UK drinker is underpoured by somewhere between 88 and 114 pounds, which is their currency each year.
Okay.
What would you do with that information if you were a pub goer?
Well, so the weird part is in the U.S., the standards of, you know, what the head should look like and everything else, that's established by if it's craft beer, there's a craft beer brewers association that talks about the head and the pour and everything else. Yeah. And it also determines how much loss there's going to be potentially in a pour. So let's just say that there's an average pint in the U.S. is 95% full.
Yep. Okay.
It's accepted that during that pour, there could have been equally a 5% loss.
Accepted just generally by the consumer?
No, by Craft Beer Brewers Association, okay. Meaning that as you poured that, you either were over-aggressive mm-hmm. and now the head kind of was too much, so you kept the glass at a little bit more and let some of it come out.
Yeah.
Someone turned it on and then put the glass underneath there, but it's generally accepted that there is an order for a perfect pour. A perfect pour is 95% because 5% is lost in order to get you up to the 95.
Yeah.
So an improper pour is actually 100%, which is now there's no head on it.
Yeah.
And therefore the flavor profile is reduced or removed. Or secondarily is 15% head mm-hmm. on there and therefore had no waste because you transferred the brewer's waste into the glass.
Right. So as a consumer, have you ever sent a beer back?
No, but I will tell you, I also understand the mathematics, and I understand that. Let's say I had 15. Let's say I got a pour and it was 15% head versus 5.
Yeah.
I know that beer, when I put it up to me, is going to smell far more appetizing than if I would have actually only had the 5% head. Mm-hmm. I know that because that's where the actual aroma, the releasing of the gases, is actually doing that. So I view it from that standpoint that it's going to excite a different sense.
So what you lost in content,
I'm gaining on the other end.
Gaining an olfactory experience.
Yeah. Now, if I knew if it was 25% on there, it would be even the poorer won't serve it to you that way.
You didn't get that much.
Yeah, and the poorer will recognize that on that side. But it's, to me, it's remarkable how often if you do have that extra head on there, someone will say, "Man, that beer was just delicious," and they'll come right back for that same beer because that. A sense of smell overrode the, you know, 0.78 of an ounce that they may have lost. It was worth it. It was a worthwhile trade-off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like buying a 16-ounce steak versus a 10-ounce steak, and one's got 4 ounces of fat and the other one's got none. You're losing a lot of the other one, but yet the flavor profile is probably going to be significantly better.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So there you go.
Yeah. See? All right. So we'll shift gears and we'll talk real briefly about some information that's coming out. It's a group called Qualified Plan Advisors. They've done their second annual financial wellness report. And they study a number of employers, 75 organizations, and determine whether or not employees are feeling like they're on the right path for retirement. So if you were to take a guess, what percentage of men do you believe think they are not on track for retirement? Percentage of men believe they are not on track for retirement.
Percentage of men. Boy, that is a really, really tricky one, because if I get too kind of in the weeds, I'm going to go with the average male tends to feel more confident, and therefore I'm going to say somewhere between 70 and 90, so I'm going to say 80%.
64.
Okay.
So same question, but for women.
Yeah, I'm going to say 36.
77% of women believe they are not on track.
Yeah, so I was right. I said 36% we're on track.
Okay.
So it's 26%.
Yeah. And you're right. So more men believe they are on track than women.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of said that men tend to be more confident.
Yeah.
It's not like they are on track. They just believe they are.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
The average male tends to believe, and you and I fit this perfectly, they'll just do whatever it's going to take to do it.
Right.
And a female,
including not retiring.
Correct. And a female, not to stigmatize, but in our dealings, tends to believe that, well, what if it doesn't?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What if you can't? And that is the nurture versus nature, or whatever the term is. There's the thing. And I think that a lot of that still just exists inherently. And I also believe that this goes back to men would leave and they might be gone for 4 days, and then they were expected to come back and bring something with them. And a female might sit there for 4 days and worry, you know, this is caveman stuff, right?
Right.
That he may never come back. And therefore, what happens if he doesn't come back? And and I don't think that, you know, a couple thousand years or whatever, however, removes that from people's genetic makeup. I still think that exists in large part.
I mean, when you look back on history, if you are to call us civilized at this point in our evolution. We haven't been civilized very long.
Correct.
It's been a short road.
Yeah.
So would you think that young workers are more skeptical or less skeptical as to their retirement capabilities?
Less workers, more or less skeptical?
Young workers, more or less skeptical.
I think that they believe that they're better suited for it than not, than most.
Actually, that's not true. So 80% of individuals under 30 believe they are not on track.
On track. I thought you meant suited, like they could handle
skeptical.
It.
Skeptical, yeah. They believe they're not on track.
Oh, I believe they don't believe they're on track, but I also believe that they believe that they're capable of getting on track more than anybody else.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it doesn't address that.
But that's my guess.
66% of those over six, over between 45 and 60, 66% between 45 and 60 believe that they are not on track.
Okay.
So still the majority. Now, at 60, it changes. So at 60, and I think this is just, obviously there's some certainty. You've got some certainty because you can look at your account balance.
Mm-hmm.
But some of that is also just acceptance. It just is what it is. You know, you've got 5 years or 10 years, whatever you've sort of set down in your mind. But this is kind of a big deal. So what is happening here is you're starting to see employers recognize that this is hindering their employees' ability to work.
Yeah.
Because it's causing mental health issues. It's causing sleep disorders. And it certainly impacts happiness. And not just happiness in general, but happiness with work, you know? If I'm going to work every day and I'm spending all this time at work, but I don't think I'm going to be able to retire, it's a problem.
It is, yeah.
And so what you're seeing is a push by employers to help their employees understand better where they are and understand how to get where they need to be from a retirement standpoint. And by the way, that's something we've done for years.
Yeah.
In our office.
I was about to say, this sounds like a every 3 to 5 year recurring theme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if someone out there has a employer plan and they've got a group of employees that they want to help have a better understanding of where they are in life with regards to finances and
you want to have retirement. A beer and talk about it.
Yeah.
It's exactly right. It's exactly right.
You should contact us.
Yeah. But you are correct. It just seems like at times that it is that kind of a recurring theme. And in many cases, lots of the best solutions are brought forth to the employer by the employee. It's not top down, it's bottom up. So even as an employee, it's great at times to make your employer aware of those. We certainly appreciate everybody listening today. Appreciate Big Nate stepping in and appreciate the good music today. Mark does actually some really good pulls. We hope everybody has a great weekend. You've been listening to
AM Hodgepodge.
Of late, all night, I don't even need a reason why. Your love is so right. I can't wait till the morning.